So in this course, I'll introduce you to a few useful tools and concepts. For the QFT 1, 2, and 3 courses. So obviously there's a wide variety of math that is useful in QFT. I've already seen some of it in Tibra's course. I'm just going to choose a selection of topics that are often unfamiliar to students that will be used in these courses. Most of it will be used in QFT 2, and many of the topics we'll talk about have other applications, but the concepts and tools were chosen for applications to these courses specifically. So what we're going to discuss over the next 5 lectures are a few different topics, the first of which is distributions or generalized functions. And we'll spend approximately 2 lectures on this topic. And then we will discuss asymptotic series. Again, for approximately 2 lectures. And finally, summation, quotes of divergent series. So there are these topics. Well, we'll be jumping around a bit when we move from topic to topic. There's some connections between these last 2 things, but the first part of the course will be somewhat disconnected from the second part of the course. So that's where we're going for the next week. And today and Monday, the topic will be distributions. And let me just give you a brief some motivation for why we want to study this topic. Nice. So you all are familiar with at least one example of a distribution that's not an ordinary function. So distributions are a generalization of the notion of functions, so all of the functions you're familiar with are also distributions, or most of them at least. But one example that you're all familiar with of a distribution that's not a function is the point charge. So point charge has a charge distribution that is 0 for x not equal to 0. But it doesn't have a well-defined value at the origin. So this is not this last equation is okay for some applications of electromagnetism. All we really care about will be the integral of the charge density. We can integrate the charge density and get finite charge. But this is not a smooth function. It doesn't have a well-defined value at the origin. So the charge distribution for the point charge is proportional to the Dirac delta, which is sometimes called the Dirac delta function. It's a poor name. This is not a function. So that's one example that you're all familiar with. And in fact, that's the most important example of a distribution that's not a function. And understanding more carefully what the Dirac delta distribution is will have important applications in these courses later. We'll want to perform some operations on things like the Dirac delta that may not make sense if we try to think about it like something that's almost a function. And having a clearer picture of what exactly it is will make many of the manipulations and calculations we'll do in the QFT courses easier. So some things that you can do with distributions that don't make sense if you think about ordinary functions are to define things like the derivative of the absolute value function at x equals 0. So this doesn't make a lot of sense if we think about the absolute value function as a function, but in this has a well-defined meaning if we think about it as a distribution. Similarly, we can have seemingly ambiguous integrals, something like the integral from minus infinity to infinity, 1 over x. So you might like to argue that by symmetry this is 0, but the integral from 0 to infinity and from minus infinity to 0 are both divergent, so does it really make sense for those to cancel off? But we can make sense of ambiguous integrals, seemingly ambiguous integrals, using distributions. And a little more input, we can make clear what to do with when we run across integrals like this. Distributions are also useful for computing functional derivatives. So functional derivatives, you take a functional derivative of some functional. In general, the result is not a function, but it's a distribution. In particular, if we're going to take multiple functional derivatives, it sometimes can be unclear what to do if you're thinking about it with infinitesimals, but there's a very well-defined procedure we can use using distributions that makes, in my opinion at least, it easier to compute functional derivatives. Another motivation for studying distributions are Green's functions. So a Green's function is a solution to an equation like this. We've got some differential operator acting on a Green's function. It's equal to the Dirac delta. So as you might expect, based on the appearance of the Dirac delta in this equation, Green's functions are not always functions. They're often distributions. And I'll say a bit more about these applications on Monday. And finally, many, many problems that we'd like to solve don't have any solutions that are functions, but they will have solutions that are distributions. So we can come up with a physically reasonable problem that just doesn't, there's no solution that exists that's a function. Okay. So that's why we're going to learn about distributions. And just give you an outline of the next few lectures. So first, we'll go through some definitions. And so first I'll expand a little bit on why it's problematic to think about, for instance, the Dirac delta as a function. So first, what they're not. And then discuss what distributions are. Then we will go through a few of the operations we can perform on or with distributions, namely derivation, multiplication, and composition. Some basic operations that we can perform on functions, and we like to also be able to perform them on distributions. And then we'll discuss a few applications, namely to functional derivatives, and very briefly about Green's functions. And so this is the outline for the next two lectures. I expect we'll probably either finish the definitions or just get started with the derivations today. And so approximately today, the rest will be Monday. I don't think I mentioned this, but notes have been posted on the wiki. So I'll update those periodically, but notes for the first couple lectures are already there. Okay, so our most important example is the Dirac delta. This is a distribution that's not a function. And so we usually think of the Dirac delta as a limit of a sequence of functions that become more and more peaked at zero. And where the integral of each of these functions is one. So common way we can define it is just by, or that you often see it defined, is as a limit of sequence of top hat functions that are just piecewise constant. They get taller and narrower. So you might see it. Find something like this. And so these functions all have the property that they're integrals. Are 1 for all sigma. And they also have the property that f of x is 0 for x not equal to 0. So if we take the, so here f is the limit at any point once we take sigma small enough, eventually these functions will just be zero identically. Good. So this is the way you've probably seen delta, direct delta introduced. And it's not a function, because delta of 0 doesn't make sense. And so ultimately, we will be able to define the delta as something like this. But it is dangerous to think about this as a function. And we'll see some examples of where things can go wrong if we try to think about delta as a function. So this, I put a question mark over this equation because we need to be careful about interpreting this. Okay, so it's not a function. One way we can see that is to define what we mean by a function space. And we can see rather easily that the Dirac delta is not an element of a rather general class, general or large function space. So a function space is a vector space whose elements are functions. Well, slight caveat that we'll come back to. With a norm that satisfies positivity, just the usual properties of a vector space of positivity. So the norm of any element of our vector space should be non-negative. A unique identity. There's only one vector with length 0. The 0 vector, or the 0 function. Triangle inequality. We add two elements of a vector space, take their norm, should be less than sum of the norms of the individual. Vectors or functions. And finally, linear homogeneity. Take the norm of lambda times f. We get absolute value of lambda times the norm of f. So basically what you'd expect, function space is just a vector space whose elements are functions. These are just the familiar properties that vector space should proper satisfy. And our main example will be the function space L2, which is the set of square integrable functions. And that means that if we integrate our function modulus squared from A to B, it'd be finite. And A and B here indicate the which segments of the real line our functions are defined on. Okay. So the reason I put a blank space here, and that has to do with the second property here. So as if we think about the elements of L2 of AB as functions, is there a unique identity? A couple heads shaking. And why is that?
If you defined a function which was zero everywhere except maybe one at a point, then its integral is still zero.
That's right.
So satisfy that.
Very good. So we could have clearly the zero function as norm zero, but so does the function that's zero almost everywhere for x not equal to zero, and example is one at a point. That also has norm zero. So we need to identify these functions if we're going to treat this as a vector space. So we just need to identify these functions and say that they live in the same equivalence class. And so two functions are in the same equivalence class if they just differ at a finite number of points. Okay, so this is a rather general function space. We haven't made any assumptions about differentiability or continuity, so some rather wild functions live in this space. But it's not, the space is not big enough to contain delta. And to see that,
we in general allow in the general function space functions of infinite norm?
No. We this is the definition of this function.
But generally, so this is one example of a function space, or this is the function space we're defining?
Of the examples of function spaces I know of, I've never seen an example where you allowed infinite norm functions
Anyways. Okay, I'm just saying, but if we're going to follow this definition, then infinite norm is allowed, right?
Just from these properties?
It doesn't really matter, just asking.
So you just have to say what the norm maps to, right? Yeah. So if you say it's from the functions to the non-negative reals, then
that is
okay. Yeah. For the examples we'll consider, but always on our function space to have finite norm. Yes?
L squared of A, B require that you choose any arbitrary values of A and B, or A and B fixed?
A and B are fixed. So this is a set of spaces. We could consider A and B to be minus infinity and infinity, then we'd be considering functions on the real line, or we can get some subset. Okay. So delta is not in this function space. And to see that, we can compute the norm of these F sigmas. We try to define it like that. The norm of these F sigmas is easy to compute. Take the absolute value squared, which is just the integral minus sigma over 2 to sigma over 2, 1 over sigma squared, 1 over sigma. So the norm of this limiting function goes to infinity. So delta is not in this function space. That's another finite norm. Okay, so before we define distributions in general and figure out what delta is, just want to give a quick example of what can go wrong if we try to think about delta as function. So let's choose some d sub sigma so that the limit as sigma goes to 0, d sigma 0 for x on 0, and the integral d sigma is 1 for all sigma 0. So like the top hat function we looked at before, but we'll the point is this argument is more general, and we consider any sequence of functions that satisfies these two properties. So we've got a sequence of these functions that has these two properties. It's becoming more and more peaked, and it has integral 1, so it's natural to think that it approaches the delta. But we have a sequence of functions like this. Then let's try to figure out the area of the limit, the limiting, or thinking of it as a function, even though it's not g. So we try to think about it, the limiting value of the sequence of functions. We can fit it inside this series of boxes, which have width epsilon for the bottom box, epsilon over 2 for the next one, epsilon over 4, epsilon over 8, so on. And so for each epsilon and each x, we can find sigma naught so that d sigma of x lies inside boxes for all sigma less than sigma naught. So top hat function is easy to find sigma naught. So if we choose epsilon and x, we can find a sigma naught so that g of sigma lies inside the boxes. If we just choose sigma naught to be less than epsilon, right. X, so we want x to be greater than sigma over 2. So we can just choose sigma to be, for our previous example, we can just choose say sigma to be equal to x, and far enough away so that function is just zero or sufficiently small sigma. So we can fit the limit inside this series of boxes. And that tells us that the integral of this limit, if it exists, is less than a, where a is the area of the boxes. The area of the boxes is just epsilon plus epsilon over 2, so epsilon over 4, which is just 2 epsilon. And this has to work for any epsilon. So that tells us that the integral of g of x dx is 0, which is not 1, which is we switch the order of the limits. We do the integral first and then take the limit. We take the integral first and then take the limit as sigma goes to 0. We get 1, which is what we wanted. On the other hand, if we do the limit first, then take the integral, we get 0, which is quite bad. So here, the order of the limit and the integral matters. So we don't want to think about the delta in this way, as the pointwise limit of a sequence of functions. We can run into all kinds of trouble if we do that. For those of you who are familiar with the terms, the reason this works is, the reason we get this contradiction is because this sequence of functions converges pointwise to this, but not uniformly. So it's dangerous to think about delta as a function. A better way to think about it is as a distribution. And so one way to think about why we ran into this problem is that we were trying to think about delta as something that has some independent meaning when we take it outside of an integral. If we left everything, the delta, under the integral, as you often do if you're working with a point charge, or you'll be looking at the integral of the charge distribution, and things work perfectly well there. But here, if we tried to take it outside of the integral, we're just talking about g of x, and we run into trouble. So what we can do to define delta is to expand on that idea, that it works, it behaves nicely as long as we keep it under an integral. And what is an integral? It's nothing more than a map from a function to the real numbers or complex numbers. And so that's going to be our starting point for defining distributions. So distributions are maps from functions to the real numbers. And we need to specify what functions we want distributions to work on. So get a few intermediate definitions before we can define what a distribution is. So test functions are going to be the functions that distributions will map to the real numbers. And we will choose a set of test functions I'll call D. It'll be a set of C infinity functions with compact support. Okay, so C infinity means that it's continuous with infinitely many derivatives. And compact support means it vanishes outside of some finite region. Okay, and so I'm making this choice for two reasons. One is this choice will simplify many of our derivations. These functions have lots of nice properties, but we could choose slightly less restrictive assumptions on our test functions, and most of the results will still work. Be slightly more difficult to do some of the derivations. The other reason I'm making this choice of test function space is that, in general, the more restrictions you place on your test functions, the nicer your test functions are, the wilder your distributions can be. So this is a very restrictive set of assumptions on our functions, which will allow us to have a rather large space of distribution. So can anyone give me an example of a function in this space? Can you repeat that?
E to the negative x squared?
Okay, so that's certainly continuous with infinitely many derivatives. It goes to zero as x goes to plus or minus infinity, but it doesn't vanish identically. So we want it to vanish identically.
One of these top hat things, any one of them.
One of these top hat functions, so.
One specific, not all of them.
So a top hat function, it has compact support, but derivative. Yes?
I don't have a precise formula, but we could take the top hat function and just smooth it at the places that are a problem by just taking exponential minus 1 over x squared.
Good, because that's a good idea. So you're imagining defining some piecewise function. So say f of x, you using this idea, building on that idea. So we want it to be 0, say for x greater than 1. And you're trying to smooth it. So that way, you're saying something like that?
Yeah.
And we want it to match here, so that will match if we put a minus 1 here. So this is 0 at x equals 1, and all of its derivatives will be 0. Too.
You could just move the plateau thing with sinh functions on the inside.
Smooth this with sinh functions? You want to multiply this by a sinh, or?
Just choose an interval for the transition in which this is a sinh instead of a...
OK. We do want it to have compact support, so we do want it to be identically 0 outside of some finite region. Sinh.
Yeah, so like you're saying in the top part, you would say equals sine x in that region where it's not 0 everywhere else.
OK. So sinh here, so your proposal is sinh x for x. For what region do you want to have to be sinh?
I want to switch it to this part, the non-continuity, by a sinh.
Okay. We could probably do something like that. I'm not sure the exact formula you'd have. So the key point here is this, although it's not analytic, the derivatives all match. They're all 0 at this point where we change it. So this is our choice of test function space. Again, we're choosing this restrictive set of functions so that we can have lots of distributions and also slightly simplify some derivations. Okay. So that's our test function space. And then sort of distributions are going to be functionals. The functional is a function that takes a function as an input. And so we can map these functions to the real lines, to real numbers. So define a dual vector space, which are called D star, is a dual vector space. Of linear functionals. Of D to the real numbers. Not much would change if we mapped them to the complex numbers, but for simplicity, we'll consider maps to the real numbers. So that means that U is in D star if U of phi is a real number for any test function. Any test function phi in D. And linear means that U, we take U of a linear combination of test functions, we just get back alpha U of phi plus beta U of psi. And this is a vector space. So if we take, we can also, it's also linear in, we can add together elements of this vector space as well. Okay. So we want to put one more restriction in order to get space of distributions. And so we'll call D prime is the space of distributions. And it's a continuous dual space. So that means that if we have a sequence, continuous means that if we have a sequence of test functions that approaches a limit, then U of phi n goes to U of phi. And this should be a uniform limit. So the, we take the difference between phi n and phi and take the norm, that will go to zero. That's what that means. So some U is a distribution if U is finite, linear, and continuous. So delta is a distribution. It satisfies these properties. It's finite. So we have delta of x, phi of x, dx. That's phi of 0. So it's finite because test functions have a finite value at 0. So they're, they have a compact support. They're continuous. So they have a well-defined value everywhere. So this is always a real number for our test function space. It's linear. So if we added together two test functions here, we get the sum of their values at 0. And it's continuous if sequence of functions approaches a limit, then those functions are getting close everywhere. And so their values at 0 are also getting close. Delta is a distribution in this sense. And this is probably the most common way you've seen delta written. This is an imprecise but sometimes useful way to write what delta is, because nowhere in our definition of delta do we need to define its value at any point. We can define delta just to be the, another way we can write this is we can also define delta to be just the object that takes as an input a test function and outputs it's the value of that function at zero. So in this sense, delta is a functional. X is an input, a function, outputs a real number. So this is perhaps the most natural way to write it if we're thinking about distributions as functionals. And most of the time I'll be using this notation. Sometimes you also see it written like this. So I like this notation. It shows that this is a functional. This notation, see in a lot of literature, is not so good because these things are really different. This is not an inner product. It suggests that interpretation, but it's just some pairing. I don't like that notation, and I won't use it. Okay. So let's look at a few examples of functionals and try to see which of these match our definition. I'm going to write down a few examples. U of phi, integral of phi of x squared dx, v phi of 0 minus phi prime of phi plus 37 times the third derivative phi and e. W will be 1 if phi of 0 positive or 0 otherwise, and t can be the integral of phi of x or x squared dx. Okay, so I'm going to give you a few minutes to look at these examples and determine which of these are distributions. They're not distribution. I'd like you to tell me why not. I'll give you a couple minutes to work, to think about that, and then I'll hold the class. We need some more time. Everyone done? You just nod your head if you are done. Okay. So I'd like you to take your hand and hold up a one. Hold it in front of you if you think that it is a distribution. Two, if it isn't. Hold it there so I can see what you think. First one. One for yes, it is a distribution. Two, just hold it in front of you so I can see. Okay. Next one. Okay. Third one. The fourth one. Some disagreement on some of these. Okay, so I'm going to, you've all worked it out. I'm going to give you a couple more minutes, discuss it with somebody who had a different answer on at least one of these, and then I'll pull you again.
It's not linear.
No, it doesn't. Okay. Hopefully you've reached a consensus on some of these, if not all of them. I'm going to pull the class again. So again, one, if it is a distribution, two, if it's not, for the first one. Okay, more consensus. Can somebody tell me why?
It's not linear.
Good. So U of phi plus psi is not equal to U of phi plus U. How about the second one? One for yes, two for no. More consensus again. Good, very good. Can anyone tell me why? It is or isn't?
I have a bad reason, but
Sure.
It's the Dirac delta, the derivative of the Dirac delta, and the third derivative of the Dirac delta, but we haven't defined it. So.
Okay. That's correct. But yes, so it's manifestly linear. It's finite. Their functions all compact support and are continuous. So that means function and all of its derivatives are bounded. It's continuous. So if you've got a sequence of functions that approaches phi, then all of its derivatives can also approach phi.
Then I actually have a question.
Yes.
We consider function spaces to be spaces of equivalent classes of functions, and those equivalent classes are given by the by maybe being different at certain points. So how do we make sense of the evaluate the equivalence class at the point?
Okay, so that's a good question. So our first example of a function space was L2, which we put a very weak condition on the functions. So all we demanded was that they had a finite integral. So in particular, functions there don't have to be continuous. They don't have to be differentiable. So we're allowed, there are functions in that function space that are the same everywhere except they differ at a point. That's something that's allowed based on the restriction we put on that function space. For our, it's under the board, but for our test function space, we put much stronger restrictions. We demanded that they're continuous and they have compact support. So if they're continuous, we're not allowed, there isn't another function that just differs at a point, because then it wouldn't have a derivative there.
So does that mean that the Dirac delta isn't a distribution for that space? Because F1 and F2 are supposed to be in the same equivalence class, and yet the Dirac delta will give you a different value at each.
That's right.
Okay.
So that would be a poor choice of test function space if we're one. The Dirac delta to be a distribution. Okay. Third one. Good. Can somebody tell me why this is not a distribution?
It's in the dual space, but it's not continuous.
Right. Not continuous. Why isn't it continuous?
Because it changes abruptly with the value of the function at zero.
Right.
Goes from negative to positive.
Good. Not continuous. We could have a sequence of functions that approached by approached so that the value at zero approached zero from below. So it would abruptly change.
Say that it's not linear because you might have two functions that are less than zero, but then when you add them, oh, I thought that said less than six.
It was.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, it wouldn't change much if it was six, but not linear too. Yes, I think you're. Yeah, not linear. What's the fourth one?
I have a question. Do we suppose that the total domain of the compact supported function is R?
Yes.
It changes the answer.
Okay. Yes. I'm always going to consider that as their domain. Okay, can I see more agreement than before? Can somebody tell me why this is not distribution?
Not finite.
Not finite. Why is it not finite?
If you have finite value of phi at zero, then your integral will diverge.
Great. Good. Okay. Good. So I just want to elaborate on the statement I made before when I said that you know lots of examples of distributions, namely ordinary functions or most ordinary functions. In particular, functions that are locally integrable are distributions. And what I mean by locally integrable, I mean the integral from A to B of f is finite for any a and b of any real numbers. So I'll often, and most people often, slightly abuse terminology. We'll say these functions are distributions. More precise way to say it is that locally integrable functions induce distributions. And what that means is that if we want to act with a locally integrable function on a test function, it's just defined to be the integral of f times phi. And so in this sense, locally integrable functions define distributions, but it's very common. Just use the same symbol for the function. This is just an ordinary function, and the distribution it induces. Okay. So I'll just summarize a bit for today, and we can resume on Monday with the various operations and applications of distributions. So what we've seen is that we can think of the delta, direct delta, as a map that maps functions, test functions, to their value at zero. So if we think about direct delta as a distribution in this way, so there's a functional, everything works very nicely. And note that we don't have to think about the value. We think about things in this way, we never have to make reference to the value of the direct delta at any point. So this notation is somewhat misleading, although it can be useful at times. And what we'll see on Monday is that with these definitions, we can unambiguously make sense of some seemingly ill-defined function expressions. For instance, one thing we'll define is derivation. So we'll be able to define derivatives of the Dirac delta and derivatives of functions that aren't smooth, that have jumps. So all those things can be done rather easily and rather straightforwardly if we think about things in terms of distributions rather than functions. Doesn't make sense to define the derivative of a function that jumps or has some other discontinuity. That will all work out very well when we think of things in distributions. Are there any questions? Yes.
Is D star a subgroup of D prime?
Yes. So we can. So D prime, we're putting the additional
restriction of continuity. So distributions are a dual space. They're not the most general dual space. We need that extra restriction. Yes?
You know the procedure of completion of a metric space?
Completion of the metric space?
Yes. Like we did to build the real numbers from the rational numbers.
Right.
I've heard, and I'm not sure exactly how, that you can do the same thing with functions to get distributions in which or something similar. You know,
that might be possible. Let me think about that, and I can get back to you. Off the top of my head, I don't know the analogy there. Any other questions? Not all. I'll see you this afternoon.